It was a bid to deepen Australian ties with our neighbours in the Pacific. On Monday, the federal government announced its Pacific Oz TV initiative, the cream of Australian televisual culture. Neighbours, MasterChef, The Voice, 60 Minutes, House Rules, Border Security will be made available at no cost to broadcasters in seven countries, starting with PNG, Solomon Islands, Fiji. It's part of Australia's broader Pacific step up. But recruiting Harold Bishop and Toadie in the quest to counter growing Chinese media influence in the region, there's an interesting game afoot. It's been played seriously. Last year, China's state-owned broadcaster took over the frequencies left by ABC's Radio Australia when it ceased shortwave transmission in 2017. So, free neighbours and border security is a countermeasure. How does that stack up? Jemima Garrett has over 30 years' experience working as a journalist in the Pacific, including as Pacific correspondent for the ABC. She's now a freelance journalist and a Pacific media development specialist. I should mention she does work for the ABC's international development arm in that capacity. And she's also co-founder, co-convener of Australia Asia Pacific Media Initiative, APME. And she joins us now to discuss this new move. Jemima, welcome to Late Night Live.
Thank you, Jonathan.
Bit of background here first. Australian broadcasting presence in the Pacific. What's that looked like in recent years?
Well, that's a very interesting question because I guess even after this new 17.1 million Pacific Oz TV initiative, which is entirely the commercial networks, Australia's voice in the region has never been weaker, and I guess it's at a time when it's most needed. But as well as that commercial initiative, there's also the $11 million a year that the ABC spends on Asia-Pacific broadcasting. So through the commercial station set up, that'll be pretty much $5.7 million a year for just under 6 weeks of programming. Mm. And the $11 million that the ABC spends provides 24-hour television to more than 40 countries, 24-hour radio, including some programs made specifically for Pacific audiences, to about seven countries in the Pacific and Timor-Leste, and also online and mobile services. But I think what the problem is that thanks to the government cuts, this whole package of both commercial and ABC is still really not stacking up. I mean, our voice in the region has never been weaker. And the underspend that Australia has compared to its overseas counterparts on broadcasting is really quite stark.
That 17 million you mentioned around that commercial programming, where does that money go? Who gets that?
So it'll be funneled through Free TV Australia, which represents the commercial stations, and it will go to the stations that provide the programming to the Pacific countries.
So it goes to our big TV players, basically.
Which
is an interesting side benefit of this move, I suppose. I mean, how does this play in Pacific states? And we can't generalise. I mean, what does this say about the voice of this country? How does it add to the way that we're perceived?
Well, look, I think so. Our group really brings together a whole lot of Australian media executives, journalists, technologists, experts, and Asia Pacific community members in Australia, plus we've got supporters in 10 countries around the region. And on our social media, we're getting a bit of blowback, you know, and I think that's what, when I said that, you know, watching rich white people renovate their homes won't deepen the connection with the Pacific or overcome a perception that Australia's paternalistic. Similarly, border security, it's going into a region that's very sensitive about the fact that they give Australians very good access to their countries, but when they try and get a visa, even if it's just for a short period while they're really transiting to another country, can be quite difficult. So I think there's a potential here for some damage as well as some benefit. But I think what we need really is to have a bigger vision. So there's a role for all Australian media, commercial, you know, ABC, SBS, National Indigenous Television, all the, I mean, we should have more of the Asian and Pacific diaspora communities and independent producers getting involved here. But it needs to be done in a way that is sensitive to the region and, in fact, responds specifically to their needs, because they've been quite outspoken about what they want.
Well, tell us a bit about that. I mean, presumably the thing to do is to be an enabler to enhance the capacity of communities and people to produce the content that they want themselves, to, you know, be some sort of a facilitator in that, as well as providing sort of, I guess,
well, you've actually hit the nail on the head.
Well, go on.
So, I mean, essentially, the Pacific wants its voice to be heard in Australia, because they feel that Australia only takes interest when something like, you know, they've got a problem with China. And so what the media industry is saying is things like co-pros would be ideal. And, I mean, there are so many exciting untold stories that would really capture the imagination of the Australian public as well as Pacific audiences. But I think it's listening to what the region wants. And there have been a few government inquiries in the last couple of years which have given the Pacific the opportunity to have a say. And the sorts of things they say is that point about the having their voice heard, but also they want quality information, because the media, I mean, we've just been hearing on the news what's happening to regional and rural media in Australia, exactly the same things happening to the media in the Pacific. And really, quality public interest journalism is under threat. So, I mean, as well as providing this sort of fabulous window into what's happening into the Pacific and enabling Pacific communities to reflect to their own community more the stories that they have, it would also play a crucial role in actually making sure that that vital democratic institution of the media survives to fight another day.
I mean, the more we talk about this, the harder it is to sort of find a place in that conversation for MasterChef and border security. I mean, it would appear the government's ill-advised on that, or are they getting the picture?
I mean, I'd like to see it as a first step, and clearly things like border security perhaps aren't the best idea. But, you know, the fact that Australia's recognised that broadcasting is important is really significant, because broadcasting in its modern forms is interactive. So radio, you've got all sorts of interactions that you can now have that instantly bring the voice of the people of the Pacific, as well as their opinion leaders and political leaders and economic leaders, into people's homes. You've also got social media, of course, which in an era of misinformation is important that the media there, hopefully as a quality product, is there. And, you know, television too is really important in terms of having that emotional impact that images can. So I think what we need is to have this bigger vision. And when you look at what other international broadcasting organisations are doing around the world, so the UK, for instance, I mean, everyone knows the BBC World Service, and the UK government has just given it an injection of funds, which is the biggest injection since World War II. We've seen other countries too. So the UK spends about $7.05 per person per year on international broadcasting. France, $6.34. Japan, $4.58. And according to the Lowy Institute, Australia spends just 66 cents per person. And yet, you know, when you look at both Asia and the Pacific, we're in a region that's far more complex than European countries, certainly.
China's role in this, I mean, what's the Chinese media presence in the region in recent years?
Well, it has grown enormously. You mentioned the taking over of the Radio Australia shortwave frequencies. That actually hasn't been beamed into the Pacific. They've been used somewhere else. But when you look at what's coming into the Pacific, there's really a big push. And we're seeing more now globally this new media world order that China is prosecuting. So in the Pacific, what it looks like is radio, television, FM and shortwave when it comes to radio, 24-hour services. There's also agreement with local Pacific media to replay on their own channels. We've seen China, for instance, the Xinhua News Agency has a correspondent in Suva, where there's not a single Australian outlet who has an Australian in Fiji, which is the hub of the region, and we've got Chinese state-controlled content, paid content, sponsored content being placed in English language newspapers. And I guess the sign of just how much influence this has for me came when I was in Fiji in the lead up to last year's Australian election. And the only coverage of Penny Wong's headlined foreign policy speech in the Fiji media was actually bylined by Xinhua.
Do we get the whole, we talk about soft diplomacy a lot and we talk about the role of media in that. Do we kind of get that the wrong way round? Do we get that as a sort of a paternalistic action, the sort of providing of content?
I think that's right.
Benevolence.
And soft power, there's no doubt media can be probably the most powerful soft power tool. But in fact, I don't think we should talk about it in those terms. I think we need to talk about, I mean, really when you talk about soft power, it's respect.
What are we looking for from this relationship? I mean, that's the key question, isn't it?
Yes, but I don't think you have, you don't have soft power unless you have respect, and that respect has to be earned. So in the media world, that would mean, you know, quality independent media that's there every day. Because I think one of the things that the Pacific feels, and we saw this with Samoa's prime minister a couple of years ago, basically saying that Australia had been absent without leave from the region and, you know, came rushing back when it got geopolitically complex. They feel that Australia's a fair weather friend. So I think we need to prove that we're listening and we need to be there in the conversation 24 hours a day. And that's actually what media can do. It can be there reaching out to people, ventilating people's views, interrogating people's views consistently and over a long time. So I guess our group, which is mainly, it's an entirely sort of voluntary group in the public interest, what we're looking to do is actually build a bipartisan and multipartisan coalition around realising just how important this is, and it needs to be something that's durable because if you stop and start with these things, your credibility is out the window. So what we need is something really lasting. And I guess it could be something which brought a whole lot of new stories to Australia that really have never had any coverage at all.
New relationships and new partnerships. I mean, that's probably that P word is probably the key here. I expect during this, just in closing, Jemima, the pandemic and Australian media presence, that may have been looked to for information around the Pacific. Has it filled that role?
Yes. In fact, I think the ABC has stepped up significantly in putting out programs in both English and Tok Pisin, which is the pidgin that is spoken in Papua New Guinea and understood in Solomons and Vanuatu. And I know that the ABC has been working with New Zealand stations and I think also working to support Pacific stations have been doing some good work. But I think it's just the scale. You know, there's something happening, but it's not quite enough.
Jemima, thank you. And it's a thing which perhaps gets, inadequate conversation in this country as well. But there we go. You're pushing out that boat. Thank you.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Jemima Garrett, co-founder, co-convener of Australia-Asia-Pacific Media Initiative.